Hello, everyone. Welcome to FAPS Talks, a podcast of the Foundation for European Progressive Studies. Today, we are meeting to discuss a country that has been in the hearts and minds of many Europeans for many months, Ukraine, which is fighting a defense war against brutal Russian aggression. But today, we want to take a very important angle and focus on the housing policy, which is something of one of the biggest pillars and priorities for the progressive European family. And today with me is Vita Schneider, a Ukrainian expert, someone who's both well-versed in theory, but someone who's a practitioner by heart, doing a lot of field research in Ukraine, working, cooperating actively both with academia, civil society, and the authorities on working on the housing policy in Ukraine. So in that sense, someone who publishes, but as we tend to say, someone who talks the talk and walks the walk of the housing policy. Vita, welcome. Welcome to Brussels. And we deeply Thank appreciate you. The fact that you managed to come to Brussels and speak to with us today. And I think as an icebreaker, the first question, I would like to ask you a bit to explain what have you been doing in your line of work and actually sketch a bit for us the situation pre full-scale invasion in Ukraine, so our viewers and listeners could better understand what was the situation in Ukraine.
Yeah, sure. So actually, pre full-scale invasion, I was working a lot with the social housing system in Ukraine. We did we had a project in CEDOS, Ukrainian think tank, on overviewing what does Ukraine have in public housing system. Is there any social housing, temporary housing, shelters? Well, we found out that there is nothing. And then the full-scale invasion started. So, and there came a lot of different projects to Ukraine. And then the need to analyze the housing systems became even bigger. And then I became also working on the renters, private rentals in Ukraine. But pre-full-scale invasion, the Ukrainian system was mostly dominated by homeowners. It's the result of the mass privatization that happened in the 90s. And maybe the listeners are familiar with the Central and Eastern European countries like Poland, Romania, Hungary, which also had the same privatization. But apart from that, they also had the restitution of housing when previous owners returned and claimed their rights to housing. Ukraine didn't have that. So 95% of people in Ukraine lived in housing they owned as of 2013. And then the data is a bit vague, but it largely remains same. And this also means that the private rental market is pretty small. It was before around 4% before, and then maybe I'll explain that it became much, much larger. But also it meant that the social housing systems were underdeveloped. They were not in the focus of the government, despite the existence of the law on social housing. So unfortunately, this was the situation.
And maybe those who even follow Ukraine more in depth, they might ask, why wasn't it in the focus? The war started more than a decade ago. The internal displacement also in relative numbers was huge. And in that sense, so since 2013, while you were observing the war unfolding in eastern regions, the annexation, illegal annexation, sort of violating international law by Russia of Crimea, it led also to different migration challenges that Ukraine has to face with, which internal displacement is obviously one of the biggest ones. So I'm just thinking how you see these priorities. Have they shifted with the full-scale invasion? How does the government see housing policy, maybe in comparison to many other policies that are so significant, be it education, healthcare? Currently, of course, it's the military, the defense, etc. So what's your view on it?
Yeah, okay, well, it's a very complex question. But to start with, since 2013, indeed, there are many IDPs in Ukraine, internally displaced people. And this was the first time that Ukraine experienced this. So Yeah, unfortunately, the government didn't come up with any comprehensive housing program for them. So the foreign governments supported the creation of so-called collective sites or temporary housing in containers and sometimes in sanatoriums. But this mostly remained in the east of Ukraine, east-south Ukraine, near Kyiv also. But the western regions didn't experience the mass inflow of IDPs since 2013. And another program was aiming at continuously supporting homeownership. So IDPs that were more wealthy, that did have savings, the state supported them with purchasing flats. And this was called affordable housing program. And I want to stress that this is very different from what in Europe you understand under affordable housing, right? So I don't want to confuse these two, but this is how it
works. Maybe we can jump on this immediately and you can just also explain to everyone who's now listening to this discussion. About the European practices, also in terms of affordable housing, we all know that the channeling of funds and support for Ukraine is quite huge. So there's a lot of actors perhaps willing to support Ukraine. I'm just thinking now also with your view on how you describe with the challenges the government faces, or perhaps its drawbacks in certain policies. Have they been looking to you to get some knowledge, experience, best practices? Or maybe if we would put you in that position of a relevant ministry, what would you say are good practices to look at, also considering the current situation with the full-scale war, which very sad that some of the cities completely disappear and everything is destroyed. And I think rebuild reconstructions is hardly impossible. So you, in that sense, so if anything that you would like to sort of point out with Europe as a good practice.
Well, another complex question, but... Yeah, so to start with, it's not only EU that supports Ukraine and gives funds. So it's not only up to EU to, suggest policies. So far, with the full-scale invasion, Ukraine launched, government launched a big program, Є відновлення, which is aimed at compensating people who lost their housing that was either damaged or destroyed. Well, one problem with that is that not everyone had legal documents for the housing. Another problem is that it's only for deoccupied areas. So people who lost their housing in occupied areas cannot claim the compensation, but also it's aimed at primarily supporting private construction businesses, developers. So there can be no purchasing housing in cooperatives or building your own housing if you own the flat, or like social housing, none of that. And I believe that this is a huge problem actually, because around 10% of housing stock has been destroyed or damaged as of February 2024. And this affected around 2 million households. And the outcomes of Є відновлення are thousands of families. So it's incomparable. And there is no viable financing for this program either. So in my opinion, what should be done is instead prioritizing homeowners, despite we recognize that really these people lost their homes and Ukraine is this situation of mass homeownership. But the tenancy structure is shifting. So more and more people start to live in rentals. More and more people don't know what they want to do, if they want to move to Europe or elsewhere, if they want to move within Ukraine. What if it becomes worse in the energy system? And they want to have this freedom of movement. And it's not really smart and sustainable to finance the private housing for some, for a minority of people. It would be much more sustainable to develop social housing, maybe social rental housing, but also to establish the rental regulations so the market is more safe and stable and comfortable for people, and they can allow themselves more long-term, middle-term arrangements on the private rental market. And this is the way that you can support more of the affected households than just granting the full homeownership to some. Also considering that these homes, unfortunately, they can also be damaged later, right? So
Just building on that, because I think you touched on that critical issue for the Ukrainian society as the whole. People are moving within the country, but also outside the country. And very often, I think from that progressive perspective that is being discussed, the question of community building or trying to bring community together. And sometimes the housing policy is also mentioned as perhaps an instrument that can help in this community building process. Because again, personally, you can hear maybe from some interviews on the field in terms of like a field research, if you read it, tensions that erupt, as you say, homeowners which rent and then, or even families that move to other family members. I'm just thinking if you notice this connection or link within the discussion of the housing in terms of the future community building, trying to manage the current situation difficult with during the war, but also thinking of how we invest in community, our own community, and build these that can sustain communities again, with people probably from the east might never be returning to the previous homes they had, etc. So if anything in that regard that you would like to share, I think that would be also extremely interesting to hear, because I think that social aspect sometimes is overlooked over infrastructure and that focus.
Yeah, it is actually a huge problem. So if you like look at stats, 60% of IDPs live in rental housing, and most of them, I did a lot of fieldwork interviews, most of them report that they face discrimination of some kind, that they face evictions, that they face rapid price increase, and the state does not support them in any way. We don't have any regulation for that. And also the homeowners feel like they have rights to do so, like there are others who will come. And also the IDPs are now in this very precarious situation when they're always on the move, and homeowners are projecting on them all the scary things that might happen. The furniture might be destroyed. We don't know of what opinions these people are, or something like that. But also, since the displaced people know that a lot of landlords currently live in Europe and rent out their flats, and usually it also means that they would rent out the flats in euros or in US dollars. And these displaced people, they don't get salaries in euros, right? So all of these little things in the housing, they create like clashes and conflicts. And what should be done? We should support these displaced people. I think the municipalities should openly say that no, this cannot happen, like asking for rents in the foreign currency, for example. Or no, this cannot happen, the evictions. It's even in the constitution, you cannot evict a person like that, or promote the rental agreements that everyone knows that they should exist, they should be signed, they're totally valid also in courts. Like the support should also come from municipalities and from the state. Another thing is that what we see from the projects, like housing projects that are now appearing in Ukraine, they're usually meant to house a huge number of IDPs in a village, you know, like creating this ghettoization. So one of the last ones was meant to be built in Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast in a village for 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And there should be housing for 800 IDPs. And there are practically no like social infrastructure is large enough to accommodate all of that, and they would live in housing blocks next to people who live in their own homes. And you know, this project didn't work out in the end because the local population was against it, and I also totally understand that, because sometimes these projects just put people in random places without like previously considering what does the local population think? What would it mean for them? Would it mean more hospitals or schools or kindergartens? And if it doesn't, then, you know,
You haven't noticed, maybe from my side, just to as a summary, you haven't noticed that much involvement mean consultation and getting the local population being involved if these initiatives are set up. If we choose an A, be it Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast or near Lviv or whatever, and then it's just being set up. It's not that it's a comprehensive, that you ask the locals, you try to understand how we should live together one another. So.
Yeah, often it is like that, you know, maybe the oblast level and maybe the municipality, they say, yeah, we have this piece of land somewhere. Now we have the Samargated communities, Ramadas, and sometimes the central city makes the main decisions for them, you know, for the smaller villages around. So it's not always very participatory. And that's a problem because this of finances and efforts, they could have found a better place, a really sustainable, nice place to develop, but then it's not happening. And I think one of the biggest problems is also the how uncoordinated the effort really is. We know as housing researchers that there are different projects popping up. There is no proper legislation to accommodate them. Many of them call themselves like social housing. However, it's not possible to have social housing like they do it. So I believe that they probably have some internal agreements, like municipality, a donor, and the state maybe. But I doubt that this is a sustainable model. And in order to have sustainable model, we should develop the proper housing legislation. Mm-hmm. And this is what's going on right now, the drafting of the law on housing policy. And that's a good thing that this drafting started. Although looking at the draft, there are not many new things there. For example, about the private rental market, it's I think 4 points about that. And the good thing, though, is that this law on housing policy is aimed at halting privatization. And this is very important for establishing social housing system, that the municipal and state housing couldn't be privatized anymore. It's necessary, because if we build social housing now, put people in there, can get privatized in 5 years. So this should be stopped. Another thing is that the law will create the institution of housing, social housing operators. And this is a model that exists in Europe. For example, in Austria, it exists too. It's the, basically, the municipality can be housing operator, but also the limited profit companies can be housing operators. And then they manage the housing, they can receive the subsidies, they can receive the like lower tax, they pay lower taxes, they maybe can receive the land cheaper. So this is very important to have these housing operators. And this is a good thing that is happening.
And I'm just thinking, because you, maybe it's always a good thing to have in these kind of discussion a bit of understanding on what the external actors, those partners that want to support Ukraine, what they can do. So obviously, I think you mentioned that legislation is a good first step, but it needs to get improved, and then it needs adoption, etc. So I think that's already one area where all those who are listening to us, and perhaps also on the level of decision making, individual countries of the EU or EU other partner would like to support Ukraine. But maybe also asking you if you see anything else from your personal experience, obviously it's going to be subjective based on your own research that you did, anything that you feel that the partners, maybe in our case, let's look at the EU indeed, Europe, any areas that you would feel that the contribution that can be offered would be very useful, tangible, something that that can really benefit Ukraine, again, coming back to these good practices. Yeah. You already mentioned, I think, ghettoization and isolation is something that the many European countries have grasped in the past and have made these mistakes. Yeah. So it's good to understand them. And maybe also on these good things that have happened and you would see as to some extent transferable. It never one-to-one, but anyway, maybe some practices.
Considering I was talking about this more or less uncoordinated effort, and I think it would be very, very helpful to maybe look into the direction of Finland. They have this ARA housing agency, and this is the national agency for housing that kind of collects different housing projects, initiatives, but also produces policies, produces analysis, produces data. This is very important for Ukraine right now to have database policies made, because we still have very kind of low understanding of what is going on the ground. The government largely doesn't do much, surveys. Most of the data we get as researchers is from the large humanitarian organizations, UN, International Organization of Migration, like this, but not the state, although they're people most interested in this, right? So it is very important to have this national agency, a housing agency, that would suggest changes, offer something that could learn from experience, but that could also like teach municipalities how to do social housing, for example, or how to do land policy. This is very, very important. And this already exists in Europe, and it took a long time in Europe to develop also. Another thing is maybe from post-Second World War policies, which were successful here. It was a similar thing, large-scale destruction, a lot of renters, and Europe started to implement the regulation on rents. First of all, as rent freezes, so it's a war, it's the crisis situation, we should freeze the rents at the level where they are now for them not to go higher, because mm-hmm. the demand is high, obviously, but these people cannot pay. We need to provide some social security in terms of housing for people, right? Also, there is this mechanism of rent caps, and it exists now in many European countries, that for the housing with this specific conditions, location, facilities it provides, that there comes some rent cap, and the rent can only increase if there are some improvements made to the house. And this is logical, because in Ukraine with the start of the war, rent increased just because of the demand. Nothing else stopped it, and it shouldn't be like that. That's the huge crisis situation, right? I talked about social housing operators a bit, but I also want to say that there is this newer practice of social rental agencies, and I believe it might have a lot of sense in the Eastern European countries with mass homeownership regime. So you cannot, like in Europe, talk to developers, to owners of the residential buildings. We don't have that. We have individual owners. And it might make sense to develop social rental agencies that would take on them the responsibility for housing. So they would rent from homeowners, and then they would rent out to people who need that. And then you can subsidize this housing, social rental agencies, right? So the government could give them money, or the municipality could. It would be so much easier, both for homeowners, for people who rent. There would be less discrimination, less evictions. They could do everything like according to the legislation which should be developed. So like this. And another thing that I also want to suggest that exists, I think now in Spain and in France, among European countries, is the additional tax on vacant housing. So this is another thing that has to be stressed. Ukraine actually doesn't have to build more. We have vacant housing, and a lot of it, and it's housing from people who left the country. And I understand that it might be not that popular opinion, maybe, but this is a vacant housing, and Ukraine is in huge need for housing its people, for them not to return back to occupied territories or shell territories, conflict zones, right? We need to house them, and Ukraine has to show them that they have the support. And the tax on vacant housing can either push homeowners to rent it out, right? Or maybe even to sell it. Maybe they can use this money here, right? To sell it, and then this will make the homeownership more affordable, because more supply would help. That, yeah.
Yes, this is extremely comprehensive. And what maybe I would like to do nearing till the end is also to explain to the listeners and viewers that you have written an excellent policy brief that actually is within in the framework of FEP's series, analytical series called Progressive Ukraine, where this housing policy is being addressed. So everyone who wants to get more detailed overview can definitely go and read it, and we would wholeheartedly recommend doing that. In that sense, that also, as you know, Vita, we hope to have you on board with once these activities to Ukraine are progressing and with FEPs, but maybe it would be also interesting as this roundup, also to hear where everyone who has listened to you today and got this interest in understanding better what's happening in Ukraine, the perspectives, the long to medium term perspectives, where they can find your work. Maybe what kind of watch it, read it, because I know that you have been doing different things within this context. But it's, again, with having that sort of intellectually stimulating conversation that we had today, if someone is not satisfied and would like to get that more and wants to have someone who's really in the field and talking to people, to individuals who are facing all these challenges. If rounding up, you can also tell us basically what you plan to work on and mm-hmm. what kind of sort of where we can read and listen to you, etc.
Well, so my main activity now is that I'm a researcher in Ukrainian NGO New Housing Policy, and we produce a lot of analytics and reports. And with my colleague, we wrote an academic paper, but it gives a good overview of the wartime housing policy in Ukraine. It's called Continuities and Change. And then in the new housing policy, we also had the paper analyzing Austrian experience with limited profit housing associations and how it can be translated to Ukraine. So we even like drafted how it can look like in Ukraine, this law, and what changes have to be done in tax policy, land policy, social policy, things like that. And also we had a PBL report where every year we have a conference and analyze what changes happened during that year in Ukraine and what more alternative housing policies can be implemented. So we work on that as well. And another thing is that I'm also a co-founder and activist of Renters Union in Ukraine. And we currently work also with the International Union of Tenants, which is based here in Brussels as well. So I think it's very important thing to do to develop the renters movement in Ukraine. So maybe you can also check us out.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I would like just to end again to recommend everyone going, finding the Progressive Ukraine series and Vita's sort of analytical materials in particular. But I think it's for FEPs. We hope to continue promoting the Ukrainian expert voices, all those who are witnessing and researching and analyzing and have a deep understanding of the context, and continuing also emphasizing the social aspects. And we understand that the battlefield is extremely important, and as soon as the war progresses, the state security and the questions of defense are so crucial. But we would like here today also, I think, in our conversation to show that it's very important to have the social aspect, the human security, the dignified social contract, that individuals who also fight on the battleground, they can return to homes, they can have a home. Those who fled Ukraine or had to flee Ukraine would want to return to that. So I do hope that we transmitted this message. And again, thank you so much, Vita, for coming.
And thank you for having me.
I think it's to be continued, and we hope to having you with FEPs and future activities. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.